hybrid.
Welcome back.
I wouldn't do it again. I might. I'm in a really silly mood now.
Hello, Fife fans.
Hi, Craig.
Hi.
Oh, fuck it. Welcome back to Scotland's premier Fife-based podcast, Fife Club. The first rule of Fife Club is...
Talk about Fife Club!
Fair enough. Yeah, I'll do.
I heard a yodel. I don't know about you guys, but I've just got a vague sense of Toblerone.
Yodel, eh?
Talk about Fife Club.
It's beautiful.
Hell yeah.
Yeah,
that would be, I would be a good yodeler.
You have the complexion of a yodeler.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, definitely. I have the voice box of a yodeler.
Yeah, the lung capacity.
Anyway, sorry, continue with your beautiful introduction.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. So, yeah, thanks to everyone that shared, liked, and recommended last week's episode from the Whiskey Fest. It was a blast to do and a fucking nightmare to edit. But, yeah, we just hope you all enjoyed a little change from the norm, and we would recommend keeping an eye out for tickets for next year's Fife Whiskey Fest too, because it was that good. I think we'll probably be going back.
It was good.
Yeah.
Got steaming. Noticeably so.
Very steaming.
Did you go, I've not listened to last week's episode yet, I will do though, but did you go around all the different stalls and the first thing that you asked was what percentage was the whiskey?
No, actually.
No, but a lot of them told you.
What the strongest one is, well, and then that was your favourite, the one that got you most pissed.
I had one that was, I had a couple that were 60 something.
Yeah, they were quite straight about, say, they would pour you it and then go, so if you just have a wee sniff of that and on the nose you'll catch this and it's, you know, this and that and it's...
it'll burn off 60% of your tongue.
Pretty much.
What's the term I'm looking for? It's cask strength.
Yeah, cask strength.
And it's just like, oh, yeah, it's like 59%. It's like, oh, okay. And then there was things like the Aquavita from Lindor's, which is like 67%.
Oh my God.
And the New Make Spirit from
that's
King's
a base
Bar,
spirit,
which is like 63%. Like, yeah. There was a lot of really strong stuff. But I think I said it last week, and again, it's the thing that amazed me, is none of it tasted like paint stripper.
I bet it all tasted like paint stripper.
No, a lot of it was
whiskey
actually quite
is
pretty.
Fucking
if BE was here, it'd be, you know, 1-4 battery acids.
Yeah. Yeah. Normally that would be Mark, but we kind of managed to.
Yeah, it's all right.
Converted
him. It's all right. Yeah.
Good. Yeah,
I don't know if I was just in a drinking mood. I just kept annoying people by going around to all the stalls and going, do you know of a whiskey called High Commissioner? Because that's my favourite.
It's
being commissioned.
It was also stupidly well organised for a first event.
It was. Yeah.
Really well organised.
Really, really well
I think that's an inappropriate term to use. I'm sure that they intended to organise it well. Well, I'm saying it's stupidly well organised. It's just that they didn't mean to organise it well. They were just stupid and it happened. I'm sure it was intentionally well organised.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think what Jamie's sentiment is was that...
Very well organised.
It just went off without a hitch. There was no problems. Nobody... no misbehaviour or, you know, anything like that.
I've got a question. What was the gender balance there? Where, did you see any women?
Where's the birds?
No, there was women there. It was probably, there was a lot more men. But yeah. I think there was actually couples as well going about and the like. So, you know,
it's run
by two women. So
is it?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That's good. I like that.
The Daisies were playing. So, you know, the house band.
So there were four women.
There was Jackie from Weems Malts. She was a woman.
Five women.
And a lot of the people at the stalls were women as well. Yeah. So it was actually probably more representative than I expected.
Totally expected
a sausage fest. Not going to lie.
Yeah. Fair enough. So, anyway, as you can hear, there's plenty of voices here tonight. So, on the mics with my good self, Kutch, tonight is my comrade from another mama. It's Jamie.
Hello, Tovarish. Is that right?
Tovarish, yeah.
Is it Tovarish?
Yeah,
Tovarish. I thought it was Dobberish.
No.
I'm such a dauber.
Jamie has actually crafted that joke specifically. I can see it written down. No, he's off the cuff, ladies. He's all off the cuff.
Well, next to him is the Moloise of the podcast. It's Mark.
I have absolutely no...
what?
Mark speaks Russian and doesn't even know what you're saying.
Moloise.
No.
Is it Russian for Mona Lisa?
Hammer and sickle, supposedly.
No idea, but привет, друзья.
My pronunciation might not be quite right. I did ask Google to teach me, so.
Oh, nice.
Failed.
That's because Cambridge Analytics program don't tell you something else.
To make you sound stupid. Oh, yeah.
Молодец.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, well,
fair enough.
I don't speak Russian. And across from him is our very own Kremlin. Loud, proud, and filled with terrible secrets. It's Mags.
That's amazing.
That's up there in your best ever introduction.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. And we also have Kutch, who's filled with poison.
Yes, a certain type of nerve gas. Anyway.
First boring fact, Russian fact of the podcast, the Kremlin comes from the Kreml, which means fortress.
Ah. So.
Fortress. Yeah. No, I thought you said something else there.
It actually started as like a pillow and a duvet fortress.
Absolutely. The renovations that Yeltsin did were pretty exceptional.
It does look, I mean, it is pretty. So when you see pictures of Russia, of like the Red Square and stuff like that, and there's all the domes in the background. Mm-hmm. Is that the Kremlin or is that a separate church?
That's the church.
That's the church. Because I always think it's beautiful, it's really gorgeous stuff, but I always think it's quite camp, like when they're talking about like the might of the Russian state, and then they like show you this square with like these pink glittery domes and the like blue, like stripy mushroom things.
It does
and
look like something out of a fairy tale, but like a really, really made up fairy tale.
The actual Kremlin's huge.
Yeah, it's massive. Like, it's
behind massive walls. Like that.
Have you been allowed inside it?
I've never been to Russia. Technically, not allowed into Russia. Can I just point out?
Not been.
Yeah. Maybe you should tell the people about the theme of tonight's podcast.
Well, if you haven't guessed, obviously we've talked in the past about how Dunfermline and Fife and the surrounding area has quite a lot of strong links with Russia and the Communist Party. And, you know, obviously in the news at the moment, Russia is everywhere.
We're paying
literally everywhere
We're paying tribute to our new Russian overlords.
That's pretty much what we're going to do in this episode. So,
And if they're listening, I'm available for a job.
so Mark...
Wait a minute, you're not any good at hacking and...
No, I really don't understand computers.
Can you deliver nerve agents to people?
Well, maybe. I could get a job at DHL.
Yeah, you could deliver nerve agents, just not chicken to KFC.
Maybe that's where the chicken went. Maybe they had to pull all the chicken because it had been contaminated.
I guess they'd have to pull that.
God.
I'm so sorry. I ruined it for a really bad joke.
It wasn't meant to be a joke. No. There's a serious comment about how if they had a box of polonium next to a box of chicken, they wouldn't be able to serve the chicken due to health and safety reasons. But you didn't. You had to ruin it.
I'm really sorry. And I ruined it with such a bad joke.
On form.
It's actually pretty typical, right?
So, was anybody surprised at the Russian election result this week? What was it, 77% of the vote going to Putin?
No, I think you missed that. I think it was 70,000,000.
70,000,000% of the vote that went to Putin.
Yeah, it wasn't a surprise, was it?
Well,
no. Jamie, how'd you go?
Well, I'll just interrupt.
I think you'll find Mark.
That's cool.
No, I was just going to mention that I thought, I can't remember what I saw. What was it? But like one of his main opposition guy was shot in the back a few years ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Nemtsov. Then another guy's left the country.
Alexei Navalny.
See, he has the actual details.
Yeah.
And then another guy was...
Someone wasn't allowed to stand on because he's under.
Oh, he was arrested.
He was arrested under like fraud charges or something, or embezzlement charges or something.
That's Navalny.
He's the main opposition guy now, isn't he?
And also Garry Kasparov as well.
Yeah. So Garry Kasparov left the country defending his life, did he not? So yeah. So successfully ended up. What?
Just called him a pussy. I don't mean. He fights his war in a little board.
But you see, the opposition parties, what angle do they come at it from? Is it purely a democratic angle? Is it a left or right wing angle?
I'm not sure they're parties as such. Is it not candidates? Like,
this is a presidential election.
Yeah, it's presidential,
Parliamentary. Yeah, I think there's a really great line in The West Wing when President Bartlett is playing basketball with the Secret Service.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And President Bartlett passes to this giant man who like slam dunks it.
Yeah.
And... I think I can't remember if it's Josh who's playing with him. Can't remember which character it is. It says, "It's not that you cheat, Mr. President. It's that you cheat so blatantly."
Yeah,
that is a pretty good metaphor for Putin's victory. So it's like from this, like there's going to be a lot of stuff will come out in the next couple of days. And Edward Snowden was talking about it, like ballot box stuffing and all that kind of thing, right? In general terms, I'd say don't worry about that. Like they always ballot box stuff. It's quite literally a communist legacy of like the era of Stalin. Yeah. Stalin loved elections. mad for elections.
Because he won them all.
Yeah, and he made sure he won them all in that those really blatant ways of like ballot box stuffing and things like that. There was no way that this election is in any way in doubt. So none of the ballot box stuffing or anything like that that happens. Like there was a really good one in 2000, presidential election there, where there was something like 1.3 million dead people voted for Putin, which is, I mean, extraordinary. Yeah.
It's a sign of the apocalypse.
Yeah. You've got to say, Russians do like to vote. So
Yeah, exactly.
I have to say, I did see some fabulous footage of ballot box stuffing earlier in the week. I think it was on like John Oliver or something like that. So the international observers had gone in and said, well, we're going to like, in order to like counter our ballot box stuff, we're going to put cameras up in like some of the main polling stations and stuff. And so they had, the footage had been released already. And in some of them, you could actually just see, like, there were, like, women who were, like, going up to the box, like, cuddled with their back to the camera, just cuddling their breasts, which happens to have lots of votes in them, and just really blatantly shoving the box. But in other words, there was a whole string of places where, all of a sudden, at one point during the day, they decided to have lots of balloons appear, and these big clouds of balloons suddenly covered the cameras. And you couldn't see it, because they let off all the balloons for about 30 seconds, and then the balloons disappeared. And they definitely were not stuffing ballot boxes whilst the balloons were over the camera.
The way to do that in the UK, to get past it, is just surround yourself with polling station dogs.
Like distract
a tornado of polling station dogs. And then everybody goes, yes, dogs! And you can just stuff as many as you want.
Yeah, because all the cameras instantly go to the dogs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Watch Vince Cable. He's shady. Yeah. That's his tactic next time.
But you see, like, I kind of think of that as some like jovial banter cheating or something like that. Because actually, like, in the end, it's not a huge amount of the votes. And as I say, it's never going to change the election or anything like that. What is really much more sinister in terms of the way you cheat the election is the way that you basically support opposition candidates so that they take votes away from other more legitimate opposition candidates. So you had Sobchuk's daughter. So Sobchuk was the mayor of St. Petersburg when Putin first stepped into politics. Mm-hmm. He was a liberalizing mayor of St. Petersburg, quite reasonably popular and things like that. And his daughter stood in the presidential election this time. Mm-hmm. Now, it's a weird one to think that basically Putin's mentor's daughter is running for election under a liberalizing kind of sort of ticket and stuff like that. But essentially all she was really there to do was just take away votes from other more legitimate opposition parties and split that vote and make Putin's
But
vote
there
even
was
bigger.
There's a really good documentary on iPlayer following her. I don't know if you've seen it, and it's like a panorama or something, and they follow her around for a wee while, and they're asking her like, why do you think you were allowed to run in this? And she's like, well, I don't know, but I'm definitely not going to win. Everybody knows Putin's going to win. So she knows that she's a pawn in the game, but she's kind of going along with it. You get the feeling that, you know, she's genuine in her criticism of Putin, but at the same time, she's mild enough for it to be acceptable. And it's really worth watching if folk are interested in that. I can't remember what it's called, but if you just go on the news section of iPlayer and it's about the Russian election or something. So.
It's good. I just wonder about her or somebody like that, who is going to come from the background and eventually take over from Putin. He's got himself into a situation where it's almost impossible for him to relinquish control now, which is that moment where people go from being pretty despoty and autocratic to, oh dear God, we're looking at Mugabe's style situation. Because it becomes impossible for them to relinquish control. It's not just them being there. The power structures that exist round about them will collapse if they're not there in the centre.
Yeah. Well, it's look at China.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They replace one bloke that basically looks the same with another bloke that looks the same, pretty much.
And then, I mean, what's his face?
Xi Jinping.
He's now basically just in for life, isn't he? That's what they've just put in. So,
But now they're not the world's global enemy right now.
No.
Yeah.
Well,
so is it? Are we going to.
Donald Trump's, but, you know.
China. because
Russia certainly isn't his enemy.
Oh, did you see that did you hear about his phone call? He made a phone call to Putin, and apparently he was given a briefing, and on capital letters at the top, it was, do not congratulate him. They have this convention that you know, Western leaders do not say congratulations to Putin because they know it's a rigged election. So they said, they gave him all this information, but at the very top, the first thing it said was, do not congratulate him. And he phoned Putin, and the first thing he said was, congratulations on winning. Which just, how Have you heard this theory about how people are saying that Donald Trump can't read?
Yeah.
Go look up the YouTube videos. It's mental. And I thought they were stupid. But then when I heard that, I was like, oh shit, maybe he can't read. Maybe he just didn't know that it said do not say congratulations.
Yeah.
Part of me really wouldn't be surprised.
Well, apparently he likes people to read the briefings out to him. And nobody had read this one out to him. Mm. And he went straight in and said congratulations.
Rex Tillerson had it right.
Are we, so on the whole like international tension, they're poisoning people in our, do you think, so there's all these theories, conspiracy theories going around at the moment that the poisoning of the former spy was staged in order to start a war and distract from the Brexit.
A false flag operation.
Yeah, exactly. What do we think there's any weight in that at all? Or
false flag operations happen, but they're usually really shite and they're quite obvious. I don't think this is one of them, but I don't know, obviously.
I think there's legitimate reasons to ask the question of why was this done? What's the motivation? There's a lot of people have said some strident things like, well, Putin's obviously done that because he wants to silence dissent or show his strength ahead of the presidential election. Bullshit. The presidential election has been in no way influenced by this.
He was going to win it anyways.
Yeah. He was going to win it anyway. Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't make him look strong or weak or anything like that. If anything, there's literally no strategic...
It makes him look a little bit incompetent because of how messy it's been. It's not being contained. It's gone very public. You know.
But if you're gonna do it, you kind of want it to be public, though. Yeah. I mean, why would you go to all the extent of poisoning somebody in such an elaborate way if you didn't want people to know about it and see it?
The only thing that is a bit weird is that it was done on a spy after a spy swap.
Yeah.
Which is strange because then it puts in danger any future spy swaps. Mm. Not only that, or anything. And I forgot what I was about to say.
I would pick up on exactly that point. Unless Sergei Skripal has suddenly become reactive done, then it makes no... you're absolutely right. It makes no strategic sense to poison someone who's involved in a spy swap. But at the same time, there's obviously people saying, well, no, it's just Putin wanting to show his strength and that he can get to anybody at any time. That is quite possible. Mm. But it just doesn't, to my mind, seem particularly plausible.
No, it's what makes me think that If the Russian government has had anything to do with it, and I mean, I know that's what the government's telling us, but as I've said, there seems to be a very, like, strong propaganda feel about this. There was, like, even stuff, sponsored posts on Twitter and on Facebook from the Foreign Office
Watch out for Russians.
I posted it up in the group, but it was all about the Salisbury, and it was about how it was Russia, basically. And it was just like, check our response to this event. And there seems to be something that's very, Russia did this. We know that Russia did this. Russia did this. Russia.
Stock unstable. We are in control.
Like, just something doesn't ring right about that, but I don't know what. Mm. That's the thing. Yeah. As I say, was it Putin? I think he probably has had very little to do with it. Was it somebody within the Russian government somewhere? Very possibly.
That's the thing, I don't know enough about Russian politics. You know, civil servants in this country have sent special forces to Sierra Leone just not that long, during the Blair government, just because they thought it was the right thing to do without ministerial approval, and it's only come to light afterwards.
Yeah.
Because, you know, civil servants have their own agendas, you know, and they're there for forever, essentially.
Yeah.
And I wonder if there's people in the FSB who've maybe done some, you know. Also, I don't know, though. I don't know enough to comment.
I've seen McMafia.
Oh, someone said that. Someone actually said that on... Oh, who was it? It was Andrew Marr.
What? On the radio?
On the Marr show. No, on the telly.
On the telly?
On the telly. Andrew Marr said this week, he says, well, and has been made clear to people who have been watching McMafia. I was like, no.
Yeah. Well, because the thing is, I have seen McMafia, so I know that also there are people within the Russian government who are also involved in private mafia dealings. Mm. So it might be that Skripal was involved in the mafia and they were trying to get to him because he owed them money or something like that. So it might have had nothing to do with the government, but the government used its connections to go there and kill him because they owed him money, or his uncle was like trying to get in on someone's heroin deal or something like that.
But was that Russian businessman who there was an inquest over just finished today, I think.
There is a point in that it is as corrupt as fuck. So you know,
there's multiple different agendas all kicking about in Russia at any given time. And actually, due to various reasons, London has become the home of it. Like Belgravia is just full of Russians, basically.
Yeah.
Full of Russians who more or less got their money through really illegitimate, dodgy means. They've fallen in favor and out of favor with the Kremlin at various times as well. There was two people living, both, I think they were both living in London at one point, Gusinski and Berezovsky, two very famous Russian oligarchs, made their money under Yeltsin, basically bought his first proper presidential election, coordinated the oligarchs in this, there was the bankers' war where they were all at war, and then there was the bankers' treasury moment where they basically bought the election for Yeltsin. Mm-hmm. But Yeltsin was a good guy, so we don't really question any of that shit, which is really interesting. But the two of them actually were actively trying to kill each other. One had hired Chechen gangs, one had hired like old Vor Vizhkonya Russian mafia characters to protect them, and they would go out into like car parks and basically like Glasgow Neds and fight each other. So this kind of thing did happen, and some of this has spilled over into London because we are the home of illegitimate money and money laundering and all this kind of thing. Just going back onto the very point you made though, the Russian state point. Like, does Putin necessarily have a role in what's happening? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of theories that say that Putin has this thing round about him called Sistema, which is basically all of the ministries and parts of the state apparatus basically operate in this power of patronage, where they do things that they think that they will gain favor from Putin for doing, which allows them to maintain their power and influence. So they do things out of this patronage relationship that he doesn't either know about or might not even naturally support, but he probably does. So I think the idea that it's rogue elements from the Russian state doing what they think the president might like, to me, is a really, really plausible situation. The Occam's razor point about it being a nerve agent that's Russian state produced and held and things like that totally holds, like that. Completely agree with it. The idea that it couldn't possibly fall into other hands, we've spent the last decade telling people that we can't possibly, like, we'd have
control
to
any of it.
We've got to cut off money to terrorism because they might get nuclear weapons, suitcase nuclear weapons from the former Soviet Union because it's so poorly protected. So on one hand, we're being told this, but on the other hand, we couldn't possibly get this one specific nerve agent. That's bizarre to me. So I think that there's a possibility it could fall into the wrong hands. Absolutely. Does it definitely have something to do with the Russian state? Almost certainly. I can't see any way around that.
Because if it didn't have anything to do with the Russian state, why wouldn't they then cooperate? And, you know, you would think it would be an obvious one, although they do love noising up the West. So even if it didn't have anything to do with it, they're like, fuck it, we're going to play with you anyway, pretend that it's us, and be like, we're not going to give you answers.
Probably the best term you could put it, noising up the West.
But I love noising up the West.
It is absolutely true, though. Like, my analogy of Russians' intervention in global politics these days is like, Russia, basically, think about it economically, it's fucked. They are really not doing very well. Militarily, they've just done something pretty, like, extravagant in buying missiles that can't be defeated by missile defense systems. So even if we had the missile defense system in place for our pseudo war with Russia, they've already built something that could get around our non-existent missile defenses.
Missile defense systems hardly work as well.
Yeah, they're shut. So, but the other point is that, very briefly, is just that bit about Putin's motivations for doing that. And once you start questioning it, then what you're saying about the propaganda is it comes in and you say, well, the people have been asking and saying things like, well, why are you questioning that? Obviously, we can't understand Putin. The man's a lunatic. And there's a problem that we do that with various different, like, bad guys at various points. And, like, wherever there's a film, you know, if it's a film in the early 90s, it's an Arab bad guy. If it's the 80s, it's Hunt for Red October. It's some Soviet bad guy and all this kind of thing. But the underlying reason is always we can't understand their motivations because they're crazy. They wouldn't do anything strategic because they're naturally bad and crazy. And Putin is an arsehole. Like, we've seen plenty of examples. Knowing Angela Merkel hates dogs and then bringing a massive giant dog into press conference with Angela Merkel and watching her squirm. He's a dick.
I've seen that. But, you should watch it.
But this is the thing, is that he's an arsehole, but he's not thick. He's not unhinged. He's calculating, clever, stupidly clever.
But which he never showed any history of in the past.
No.
He was like a low-ranking KGB bureaucrat, ended up in East Berlin, sitting about on his arse and just fucking about playing judo most of the time.
He's a black belt in judo and a master of sports in sambo, if I'm not mistaken. That's pretty legit.
Is he actually, or has he just been given a special award? Like, no, yes, of course you are
I'm
a master.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he is a master of sports,
Yeah.
But Sambo's legit as fuck, so it's good.
He's also a master of riding about on horses.
Yeah. And also so, Sistema, that you know mentioned earlier. Sistema is also the name of a Russian martial arts system as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I might actually be confusing that with what was actually in the Journal of Foreign Affairs, but it's quite possible I've got mixed up. But yeah, I can't be expected to be 100% accurate.
None of our listeners know that, so.
it's fine, but like legitimately, for the first time ever, there's just this one subject that I know just shit tons about. I'm sitting next to my 18,000 word dissertation on UK-Russian relations.
Like, Mark dug out his dissertation especially for this. I think you should scan every page and we should upload it as a PDF to our Facebook page for the people that would like to read it.
Yeah. I think it's a cracking read. Let me tell you. But no, just the, very, very
no, what,
well.
What we'll do is we'll get Mark to read it and put it out as an audiobook.
An audiobook? Yeah, Mark's podcast audiobook for people who really need help getting
sleep. Put it out for a fiver on the Patreon.
Yeah.
Yes. But you know, you were saying you're like, is calculating things.
Yeah.
Like, I always think that Putin, like, what I was saying about that, they're economically and militarily in a poor state. The only way Russia gets any leverage in terms of international relations is by leveling other people down.
Yeah.
So it's like, they can't stand toe-to-toe
with Europe. It's flexing what muscle they have.
Yeah. And that influences through cyber stuff. And that is also by sowing discord everywhere.
Yeah.
It's like playing a friendly game of poker.
Yep.
Everyone's sitting around having a few beers and you're like, yeah, this is all going quite well. And then one arsehole goes in all in every single hand. And you're like, mate, you are just taking the fun out of this altogether. Like, you are stripping the energy from the room here. No one's having fun anymore. And that's Russia in international relations. That's why they fucking out in Syria. That's why they took on Crimea.
That's why they took over the US.
What's the way out, though? Like, how does Putin end? How does his government come to a halt? Or do they not? Do they continue forever and ever more?
I'm really worried about that because of the economic situation in Russia, which is only getting worse.
Totally.
And
people are
not
suffering.
So long ago, there was the whole BRIC thing, you know, Brazil, Russia, India, and China.
Yeah.
China's doing really well, although it's slowing down a bit. India's doing pretty well. Brazil has fallen through the floor. Mm. Russia is dying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's really, really, I actually worry about when Putin goes away, what might replace him if he goes away soon, because it could be something really bad.
Mm. And that's part of probably why he feels he has to hold on.
Mm.
I think there's probably the sort of kleptocratic corrupt networks.
Mm-hmm.
Because we replaced with Yeltsin, we replaced like overt corporate corruption.
Yeah.
With
and drunkenness.
Oh my god, like fucking hell. I've said it so many times, but read Yeltsin's autobiography licensed biography. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what it's called, but it's something like Fields of Wheat or something like that. Honestly, it's almost like
Theresa May.
There was that period of time. but like his biography is absolutely hilarious. Like the point where he died in Ireland. Like he just they landed in Ireland and he was dead. Like literally dead for like 15 seconds at Shannon Airport.
Yeah.
And because he had drunk himself to death and then they managed to revive him. And then he just came out the plane. I don't know if he came out the plane or if they just flew him away, but he was absolutely fucking blood to him. Like, it was absolutely, as Russians would say, pjanik ak sapochnik. Yeah, that's drunk like a shoemaker. I don't know what the eventual out is. Like, he will pick a successor at some point.
Yeah.
There was that period where we thought it would be Dmitry Medvedev.
Seems to have fallen out of favour,
He was all right.
Medvedev was okay. I mean, I was reading a wee bit about kind of how they played pass the parcel with it all as well.
Yeah,
President, back to Prime Minister, that kind of thing. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he's on the cards at all anymore.
Well, he's still Prime Minister.
Prime Minister, yeah.
So I'm really fascinated about why this has continued, why we've like gone from communism straight into, not in all former Soviet states, but especially in Russia, into essentially another form of totalitarian dictatorial government or oligarchs and things. And I'm reading this book at the moment, which I told you about earlier, called Exit into History, which is really fascinating. So this is about Eastern Europe rather than Russia, but so much of, I'm reading this whilst watching the news about what's going on and thinking about the Russian election and stuff, and so much of it resonates. And this is a woman who's, she was born and brought up in Poland, and then as a teenager in the early 1980s, she left and moved to America. And she goes back to Eastern Europe in 1991, immediately after the fall of communism, and goes through Poland, Czechoslovakia, Romania, Hungary, Bulgaria, and is looking at these kind of new states emerging. Mm. And it just reminds me of growing up in the 90s and being in that point in history where you're like...
King Carter was very much like Romania in the 80s.
No, but I guess we didn't talk about it much. Actually, no, we did talk about it because I had a primary school teacher who was from Germany and had grown up in She was Western German, but she told us all about, you know, growing up in the Munster Division and stuff like that and things. So it was kind of on our mind, and I had parents of interest in history and stuff like that. But we were, I always felt that it was, you know, the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1990, 89, 90 was this great turning point in history where these countries would move away and they would form democracy. You know, you were growing up in the West that they'd finally, like, turned over to democracy and it was going to be so much better. And for so many of these countries, it totally didn't happen. Yeah, and so I was just going to read a little bit from the book. I know we don't normally do this, but it's a serious episode of
Fight Jack Club and Ori.
I know. Well, just this totally. So this is about Romania, and she's talking about, she goes to Romania in 1991, and there's just nothing there. They're like, you can't get food in the shops. There are hardly any services. People are sort of relieved that Ceausescu's gone, but there's nothing replaced it. And she's kind of asking why. And this made me think about, well, I've been thinking the whole election. Like, why do people let Putin get away? Why is there not some movement against him that, like, I appreciate one person on their own or one political party on their own can't bring him down, but the fact that this movement against him hasn't happened. But this really resonated with me. So she says, in relation to, like, she's talking about the shortages in the shops and things, but she says, among all the shortages in Romania, perhaps the most serious is the shortage of a usable past. It matters if you had, or she's like, oh, I'm not, some people might think this doesn't matter, but it matters if you had a grandmother who in your childhood taught you tales of a time in which heroes fought for everyone's freedom, or if you're in your high school days, you read about visions of a good society, or if, for that matter, the family lore included the memory of an energetic uncle who started a little store with his two friends, which then developed into quite a business and began exporting his pins to America. It matters because such stories point you towards certain standards and actions. They humanise ideas. They make it plausible that you might fight for freedom too, or take a risk of opening a store all on your own. So, like, is there just, is the culture, I don't want to make this sound terrible, but is Russian culture just completely lacking in that ability to imagine what else it might be? Because there has been nothing else. You've gone straight from communism into these really strong, powerful, verging on dictatorial leaders, and there's no imagination left.
I think it's different countries, and the end of communism happened differently in different countries.
Yeah.
So in, like, if you take Hungary for example, Hungary got to this point where the communist regime was really struggling, and there started to be this intellectual opposition against the communist regime.
Yeah.
And then even the communists themselves, basically the border to Austria opened up so people could flow in and out of the Austrian border. But basically they had what was essentially called an intellectual revolution. So they actually had already worked out that this is not what they wanted anymore.
It was more like a classical liberal sort of
idea. It was just
like liberal.
Their democracy then flourished as a natural result of that. It's like they'd already come through the ideas stage, and it was actually led by the intellectuals, and then they were able to have this reasonably decent post-communist era. What's happened now is that the right wing have got in, and it's become increasingly a liberal
So that's really interesting that you word it like that, because I was in Hungary about 18 months ago and met a young woman who, well, she was like actually my age, but she was just doing her gone back to study and doing her political dissertation, and I was chatting to her about democracy, you know, what's it like to live under democracy, and she says that we've never had, I always remember, she was like, oh well, we've never had democracy in Hungary, and there was this American woman, she's like, oh yeah, but you know, fall of communism. She's like, no, what we've had since the fall of communism is not democracy, it's post-communism. And as far as there's a feeling, you know, particularly, you're totally right, like it was led by intellectuals and things, but there is a feeling certainly amongst younger people at the moment in Hungary that what replaced communism wasn't what we consider democracy as such. And you're right, and it's now been seized by the far right, and it's going towards doing horrific things to their people and to other people that try to get into their country. But
just to wind us up, can I very quickly mention something?
That
I think there's a bit of a lie told, which is that liberal democracy is what all countries should aim for, when it's actually isn't liberal democracy that necessarily makes these places, you know, Western countries great places to live. Well, it is. It's also that we're the most powerful countries in the world and have taken a lot of wealth from other countries and don't give it back.
Yeah.
Russia didn't really do that.
Yeah.
Not to anywhere near the same extent as, say, the West has. So I think there's this idea that liberal democracy is what everyone should aim for, but it's a historically contingent thing and it doesn't just happen.
Yeah, you're right. Like each culture brings its own form of whatever democracy is and what it looks like.
Yeah.
It's culturally, contextually dependent.
Exactly. And just on the imagination point, I actually think that Russia had a greater ability to imagine a different future, and that's why communism was so popular. Like, as when the revolution happened,
they'd been imagining a different future for quite a while. Once Stalin took over, it changed. But up until that point, the thing about imagining a better future, that's what they did in Russia in communist times. They imagined a better future. More than, think of all our dystopias. Mm. In Russia, they're like, oh, we're going to have a Mars base. It's going to be awesome.
But they were also in charge.
I don't know if it's, I'm not sure if it's necessarily about imagining a better future, but imagine a different future.
Yeah.
Imagine something different from what you've got right now.
Mm. Maybe, yeah.
Which is, I just got a really quick question, a fun question to finish off this section with.
Right, okay.
So one of my favourite stories about, so Putin wasn't concerned about whether he would win the election or not, but apparently was really concerned about turnout because they wanted a really high turnout to make it look really valid. And so they were encouraging polling stations to offer things to people to get them to come out. So, like, apparently, so this funny footage of there was loads of like clowns and street performers and stuff at polling stations. Never mind polling station.
Can I just say that if there was a clown outside my polling station, I wouldn't vote.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. But there was also, they set up a polling station in a hospital and they were doing free cancer screening after you'd voted. So you went in and voted and then they tested whether you had cancer or not. So if you, what was the one thing that would definitely make you go to a poll? If you were to get something or there would be something at a polling station to make you vote.
100% guarantee of a polling station dog. 100% guarantee, because when I don't have one, I'm really upset. Right.
Yeah. Brady's.
State Brady's
for everybody who
votes. A meal deal, basically. I go get a state Brady, a fudge donut, and a can of Iron Brew. I'd fucking vote, yeah. I think you'd have the deal most of Dunfermline.
The deal is, you get Brady, you vote for Putin, yes.
Yeah.
Guys, well, that was fun. I could obviously talk about this forever.
Yeah.
And at some point, I'll answer all of your questions in the PubMax. Because I've also written essays on all of that stuff.
Well, definitely. If listeners, if you have specific questions about Russia, please put them in the comments below our Facebook post and Mark will write you a short essay. Or go over to our Patreon page and download his dissertation for only £5.
Legitimately, guys, I'm actually an expert on this one thing. I really know my shit on this.
Wow.
That and having a perfect palate, obviously. Yeah.
So will we maybe go and slide over to our little octagon and see what Mother Russia's doing there? So before we do go into that, you're going to hear very briefly from Lindsay of the Cold Town Daisies. She's going to tell you a little bit about their campaign. Listen.
So we have a crowdfunding campaign for our new album and we're also raising proceeds for the Scottish Association for Mental Health. We've got all of our rewards and such with us. So yes, www.pledgemusic.com/projects/listen. And if you're in doubt, just go to www.thecoldtowndaisies.com and you'll find everything there.
Welcome, one and all, back to the specially constructed imaginary nine-sided nonagon for another fantasy fight club. I suggest you all settle in, for we have another tremendous fight card for you good folk out there tonight. If you're not familiar with the format yet, then I shall explain. Each of us pits two fighters into the nonagon to battle. These fighters can be anyone or anything. We then mull over their faults and merits and how we think the fight would go. We then all decide on a winner. Let's get ready to...
Rumble.
Because we can't say rumble anymore, guys.
No, that's not okay.
Because of Ant and Drunken. I can't claim that. I saw that online.
Is it not PJ and Drunken?
PJ and Drunken. PJ. Sorry, it was Ant and Wrecked. Yeah. PJ and Drunken. My bad. That started off.
Was that not the son Ant and Wrecked?
Yeah, and it was a thing of like then like I was like. I'm psyched about how good this hit is. I was like, could you imagine a person he crashed into is called Mike? It'd be amazing.
Holy shit. I haven't watched any Saturday Night Television for a very long time, but I might actually watch a week on Saturday when Declan
has to come on.
He does it. He's doing the show on his own.
I know.
First time ever in like 30 years that he has ever presented on his own without Ant.
I can't decide if the ratings will drop or if they'll go through the roof.
Oh, they'll go through a roof. It'll be like, just be like, it's not as, they should have him on it.
I hope he cries at some point just because he's on his own and he's scared and alone.
They should have him both on it. It's like, remember, Have I Got News For You after Angus Deaton got caught cheating his wife with strippers listening to gangster rap. Taking blow. That was hilarious.
They just absolutely went to
town. But they said nothing for about 20 minutes.
He has done, I would just like to point out to listeners though that Ant McFarlane has done something illegal, which he has been charged for, and he's going to rehabilitation therapy because he is big Steam and Alky.
Yeah.
So we shouldn't make fun of that.
No, I'm absolutely going to make fun of it. As I'm sitting here having my old fashioned that Pemba made for me.
Yeah. Penman made us, we took a slight break in between, and Penman made us all cocktails, which is very nice. So we apologise if this descends into a drunken ramble, it's Mark's fault because we made us cocktails.
Yeah, yeah, he made everybody cocktails.
Apart from Cutch's driving, and he has a cup of tea.
Yeah, a cup of tea. Great.
You also made me a cup of tea as well, so I'm quadruple parked.
You're on a bender tonight.
Oh my god,
tonight.
I just saw you've got the cream soda as well.
Just to finish it off. Amazing. Bottle of beer, old fashioned, cup of tea, and a bottle of cream soda there, Mark. Right. I hope you don't have to get up early in the morning because you are going to be up all night peeing now, aren't you?
I'm
going to be pissing.
Practically 35. Obviously, that's all I do anyway. Get up in the middle of the night, can't find my glasses, stumble through to the bathroom, have a pee, feel sad about life.
Put on a slice of toast. Okay,
so from one glasses wearer to another, do you have to put your glasses on to go for a pee?
No, I don't.
But like, I know my house. Sometimes.
But there's piss all over the place.
Sometimes you just get the wrong room.
I do sometimes get up in the morning and I see how long I can go for it without putting my glasses on or putting my contact lenses in just to try and improve my eyesight. It totally doesn't work at all. I just end up going back to bed for longer because I can't see to do anything.
Well, the reason I put on my glasses most of the time is because I never shut my curtains. And if I get up in the middle of the night or early in the morning to have a pee and I'm in my pants, then quite often I basically walk out of my bedroom door and can look right into the flat of your ex-boyfriend's dad's
house. Give him a wave
while he sees me in my pants. Yeah, so sometimes I put my glasses on just to check whether he's around or so I can creep to the toilet.
I'm just thinking, Max, so the last time I was at yours, you had a set of shitting glasses on top of your toilet. So
is that so she can inspect afterwards?
You've always got to put it in the Glasgow School. Is it in the Glasgow? No, it's the Bristol Stool Index, isn't it?
Glasgow Stool Index, yeah.
Yeah, it's either Glasgow or Bristol Glasgow Stool
what
Index.
What is that?
It's like it's a poo chart, and you basically rate your poo as to what it looks like to tell you how healthy you are.
Could tell you illnesses and stuff.
No, I would just like, so cuts given out to my house. So if I do put my glasses on when I get up first thing in the morning, if I then later go and put my contact lenses in, I generally leave my glasses on top of my toilet. And Cutch, because that's next to my sink, and I don't have a lot of space in my sink. Cutch interpreted that as having shitting glasses so that I can inspect my shit.
Not even reading glasses. You've got the magazine at the side of the toilet. You've got the shitting glasses on top of it. You're all set to go.
I'm still going to say that Maxie's shitting glasses was eye opening. Oh yeah, unintentional pun. Excellent. But also,
Mark's
that wasn't
so many levels.
That wasn't the weirdest thing though. The fact was that you had a coaster in your pocket.
Yeah.
So that did we mention that on the podcast?
I don't know that you carry a coaster in your pocket for neatness at all times.
Came right to my house with his own coaster, and when I didn't provide him one, he produced it and put no one else. This is my really scratty table that came out of my dad's mate's workshop. Like, it's totally covered in scuffs and marks and stuff, and Kutch took a coaster out of his bag and put it on the table, then put his mug on top of it.
So a bit behind that is when we're recording at mine, we obviously have coasters because we're not tinks. Tidied up and I chucked everything in the podcast bag, and obviously I chucked in a coaster. So when I went to Mags and found the coaster, I put it down and it sat there for the majority of the podcast, and they didn't even notice it.
Just so you know, like, from now until eternity, if I have to ever buy you a present, it'll be a coaster.
Yeah, that's fine. Well, you know what? We went to do a fight club and we've sat and bantered for 20 minutes. Thanks.
Aunt Back Dick. To Russia!
So, Russian themed fight club.
Yeah.
Who wants to go first? Who wants to chuck their fighter into the
nonagon? I'll go because I've given no thought into this. So let me happily.
Yeah.
I had a couple of various ideas, but I'm actually going to go for a classic fight between Brain versus Brawn. Oh. I'm going to go for the previously mentioned Garry Kasparov, chess grandmaster, against Rocky's nemesis, Ivan Drago.
Oh, Apollo killer.
Yeah, he killed Apollo, man. Yeah. He fucking killed Apollo.
Did you say earlier on, though, that actually he was a Swedish man?
He is actually a Swedish man.
He doesn't look, I don't think I've ever met any blonde Russian men. It was possibly the most inaccurate stereotypical portrayal of a Soviet I've come across.
Yeah, but at that point,
I've never
America
met any
didn't
Russians.
Care. They were the bad guys, so
It was that period. Yeah, that period. Then now again, that where they were totally bad guys.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, look, let's think about it again. I will point out that Sean Connery has played many, many nationalities in the world. So why can't a Swede play a Russian Superman?
Okay, exactly. Right. Okay. Fair enough. So I feel like there is a little, there's obviously an imbalance here, because as you said earlier on, that Garry Kasparov plays his battles on a board.
He does play battles on a board.
He plays his battles out on a board, whereas Swedish Man acts his battles out in the acting arena. They're not really on the same level playing field, are they?
Well, I was thinking of it more as the physical disparity, because let's face it, Dolph Lundgren's a big dude.
He's pretty massive, even now.
Do you know he used to actually be Madonna's bodyguard?
Did he?
That's how he got discovered for films as being Madonna's bodyguard. Mm. No, that was Whitney Houston's, wasn't it?
God. Yeah. Garry Kasparov is pretty big for a chess player, though, is he not? He's quite ripped.
But has he been physically and spiritually improved by Russian techno science? No, he has
not.
No,
he hasn't. Yeah.
Had the guy in Rocky. It's been a long time since I've seen that version of Rocky.
I'm almost certain there's a scene of just a needle going into his arm. Yeah.
And it's almost suggested that he's basically a cyborg as well.
Yeah. Because he has absolutely no emotions.
Yeah.
He's just out there to beat people in the ring, beat them up, and be a Soviet Superman.
Yeah.
That sounds perfectly like Russian athletics these days.
Topical.
Yeah. Totally topical. Like.
He would not be...
He was part of a state-sponsored doping scheme.
Yeah, he would not be an... What was it?
Olympic athlete from Russia.
Yeah, Olympic athlete from Russia.
Or an authorised... No, the authorised Olympic athletes was my AOA, was what they were in Rio. And I quite like that, because it was like, and there was no acknowledgement at all that they're from Russia. But when they competed in Pyeongchang, the weeks past, they were allowed to use the term Russia, and they were basically all Russian.
I missed the Winter Olympics already, but anyway, you're absolutely right. Ivan Drago, his fight camp. Jamie, you're a man who loves his combat sports.
Yes.
But didn't that look like basically the perfect fight camp? He was like, there was a lot of people in clipboards.
Yeah.
There was a lot of like bizarre digital displays as he ran out, and he was plugged into things the whole time as well. And he got needles injecting him as well. And then he did a couple of laps of the gym whilst you were watching it.
Yeah. It's actually a weird...
It was actually a fucking great montage, you know.
It is a great montage, because at the same time you have the Rocky training montage where he's like lifting up logs.
Yeah, out in the snow and
eating raw eggs and running in snow and stuff.
Yeah.
And it felt like, oh, this is America and this is Russia. You know, like freedom in the wilderness doing stuff, and this is collectivist Russia with their testosterone that obviously works.
But what did that also say a little bit about, like, America was like unrefined or something like that? Whereas Soviet Russia
It was like the machine. It's almost like the sort of the German style idea of efficiency as well. It's like this machine, everything works very, you know, very well.
Just like communism.
There's also this interesting argument, which we're totally way beyond and we don't get. But up until recently, you know, there was this idea that sports should be this natural talent that you shouldn't have to work too hard towards.
That's nonsense. And that
really super hard training and taking drugs and EPO and stuff like that is considered cheating. I mean, if you consider it, like, up until the 90s, rugby was meant to be an amateur sport.
Yeah,
the Olympics themselves were amateur until the late 20th century. You know, taking money for playing your sport or training too hard was considered cheating. And I think that sort of Rocky as a natural athlete that doesn't have to, could go out to the woods and lift rocks versus the Russian athlete who needs injections and needs all these people behind him plays into that analogy.
I'd say it's slightly different in that Rocky was more about self-improvement through doing those sorts of things.
Yeah.
And that's like talking about drugs and stuff. If you speak to a lot of people who cheat, they're like, well, why did you cheat? And they're like, well, to be honest, I don't see that much of a difference because my genetics aren't fair. There's nothing fair about sports. It's a complete lie.
And also, like, and again, money as well. Like, again, there's the point about, like, Team Sky quite often is a lot of teams would say they're Team Sky in cycling, like, just had more money than everyone else.
Well, that's
they could just afford everything to be.
And that's not fair.
And that's obviously not fair.
And they also see sports as, like, transcending what should be physically possible.
Yeah.
And therefore, it's got nothing to do with fairness. It's got to do with, and they don't really see it as being any different from
I mean, so the mantra of Team Sky, it was marginal gains. And the idea that you break everything down to its tiniest...
Marginal gains, marginal efficacy.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like, if you break everything down to individual tiny components and push them to the absolute limit of what they can be, then, you know, first of all, you know, supporting your body to perform beyond its actual natural capability is part of that. But also, once you break everything down into tiny little things, there is no morals left. There's no ethics left. Because you're just looking at... the body and the machine that you're sitting on and the clothes that you're wearing and the food that you put in it as machines. And it's not cheating to improve that in some way.
No, I mean, I'm very much of that thinking as
Have you guys watched Icarus?
I need to watch Icarus
on Netflix. It's honestly one of the best. It's just over 2 hours long, so watch it in two parts. Okay. But it's about, we chatted about this on the chat, but for listeners out there, it's a documentary about an American cyclist who starts off doing a documentary about doping and cycling specifically. Mm. And he wants to, he's talking about all these theories about marginal gains. Mm. And he's a top amateur cyclist. So he doesn't have a team behind him. He does it all himself, but he goes to these competitions around the world. And no matter what he does, there's like 10 guys in the world that are always better than him. And like significantly, they're in this league of his own. Yeah. So he thinks that they're probably doping, which doping in an amateur sport seems mental.
So he starts
looking at doping in amateur sports, and he gets in touch with a scientist to ask him, can he help him put together a doping regime that will allow him, and like, no, and he's on it. He doesn't tell people at the time, but he's like, I'm not going to like take this money or claim these titles or anything, but what I want to do is demonstrate that people are doping out there and they're getting away with it. And the guy that he approaches is involved in WADA. And so he's like, okay, I can give you some information, but I can't, like, ethics will not allow me to help you do this. But if you really want to do it, I can give you the name of a guy in Russia who will help you out. And so he puts him in touch with the guy who runs the WADA anti-doping lab in Moscow, who draws him up an entire program for doping. But whilst they're making this documentary, all the shit comes out prior to... So it starts off in early 2016 in the run-up to the Rio Olympics. Uh-huh. And all the shit hits the fan about the state-sponsored doping regimes in Russia. And so this documentary he's making, which is meant to be about doping and amateur cycling, becomes about this situation in Russia that's happening, and it's playing out as he's making the film. And the guy who's the head of the lab, the WADA lab, I mean, he becomes persona non grata and everyone's after him in Russia, and he comes to live with the guy who's making the documentary in America, and it's just fucking mental. It's one of these situations at the start of the film, you have no idea where it's going to end up at. And it's so good, and you should watch it. Icarus.
I was going to go back to the fact we talked a little bit about Ivan Drago being like hothouse, put in this Soviet laboratory of creating. Yeah. Again, the idea of the Soviet Superman is just like, it's a famous bit of like iconography throughout Soviet history. But also, there's a certain level of Soviet Superman about Garry Kasparov as well. Like,
an absolute
a child
intellectual
prodigy.
Superman.
Yeah, a child prodigy, hothouse and the best schools and things like that.
And a household name across the world.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's still ranked as the greatest chess player of all time. Yep. Longest period at number one for a long time until he was beaten by Carlson in like 2013 or something like that, his record. He basically, there was a point where nobody could beat him who was a human, so they had to start putting him against
machines, and so
he absolutely, the first one was Deep Thought. He smashed Deep Thought, that. Yep. He played against Deep Blue as well. And he basically 3 wins and 2 draws, won it 4-2. He then took on Deep Blue again in 1997. Yeah. And Deep Junior in 2003, and then another one called X3D Fritz as well. Uh-huh. So, like, you know, this man is an absolute intellectual colossus.
Oh, definitely.
I think that's pretty extraordinary. Had an extraordinary life and really, obviously, hugely talented. Could come into the ring in this fight with a great strategy, but at the end of the day, chess is wank.
And broad means everything.
Chess is often used, though, as like a thing for, like, especially in jiu-jitsu, stop it boxing as well, for combat sports, because it is very similar. It's
strategic.
It's making decisions and then reacting to someone else's decisions that are both offensive and defensive in quick time.
Yeah.
The difference is in boxing, you get hit in the face if you make the wrong move.
And then there's also that point in chess where, like, if you're really skilled at it, you could play multiple games in your head all at the same time.
Yeah.
Which is, like, there's people that can play, like, up to, like, 15 games or something like that in their head at any one time. Mm. I think that is truly an extraordinary thing for somebody to be able to do.
Yeah.
But at the same time, Ivan Drago would punch him in the pus once and knock him into next week.
If we send all the chess pieces everywhere.
Chess, I always forget his name. What's his name?
Kasparov.
Sorry, I can't remember his name.
The one that we're talking about. Kasparov.
Went out of my head. Yeah.
He's not a limber.
If you gave him like a year or two of training and then he could come up with an amazing game plan.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So I'm going to take Kasparov.
I have to say, I as somebody who's really shit at sport and very weedy, I have to have hope that brains would win over Braun, and I'm going for Kasparov.
I've got a question. See, Kasparov, is he like a pinata when he gets punched and chess pieces just fly out of him?
Oh, I'd love to see that.
And then Drago gets like a chess piece in the eye and has to give in because it's so painful.
Or like he accidentally inhales one, it gets stuck, chokes and dies. Yeah, and
or Rocky comes in, saves him in some kind of weird homoerotic fantasy.
Kasparov himself, you know, he was a defector from America, because in America he was just a friendly ghost, and then he went to Russia, got the V on the end, the off, sorry, and then yeah, is now Kasparov, he's a fucking chess champion.
Is Kasparov living in America now? Living in America. Let me tell you. Okay, so Rocky would come and help him then.
Yeah, Rocky. That ties back to Rocky as well.
And so Rocky, did Rocky beat Drago?
Then
by default, because he's living in America, then Kasparov wins because Rocky would come and help him.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Does Kasparov kill Apollo Creed? Rocky's incensed.
This is all part of some Machiavellian game that Kasparov's been playing, the long game. Yeah, I don't know. Nah, I just hate chess. I just really hate chess.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Drago.
Yeah, chess is wank, right?
It's a draw, then. It's a draw.
Right, who's
they both lose in the end, and Putin is still president. Well, I'm just going to quickly go on mine, given that it's also sport-related. Uh-huh. As we've already spoken about, I've been really interested recently in drugs cheating and the extent of the state-sponsored doping regime in Russia. So I'm going to pit two of everyone's favourite Russian drug cheats against each other. I'm going for Maria Sharapova. Was she engaged to Enrique Iglesias before he was gay?
No, that's Anna Kournikova.
That's Anna Kournikova. Yeah. I forgot about her. Anyway, Maria Sharapova.
I haven't forgotten about her.
I'm pretty sure I've got a poster somewhere. The classic one.
I thought they were the same person.
I didn't know you were so big into Enrique Iglesias.
Hold on. Can I rewind back? Is Enrique Iglesias gay?
I think yes.
No, that was Ricky Martin.
Yeah. No, I think Enrique Iglesias is gay.
It wouldn't surprise me massively.
Did Enrique not stalk what's her face? And then like move by the house next
door. Yeah.
He can run, he can hide, but he can't escape his sexuality.
the same question I would ask about Mark Beaumont. What are you running from, Mark? What are you running from? Or cycling from? Just quickly Google that. Enrique is still with Anna Kournikova.
Oh, yeah. I take it back then. I apologise. I'm getting Enrique Iglesias and Ricky Martin. Ricky Martin is definitely gay and has twin babies by a surrogate.
Yes.
You're right. Enrique Iglesias stopped Anna Kournikova.
I apologise. We're totally off track now talking about
it's not like
whether
us.
Hispanic pop stars are gay or not. My Fight Club was not Anna Kournikova, but Maria Sharapova versus the Russian curling player at the recent Winter Olympics who got done for doping. Doping and curling is a thing, apparently. I don't even know his name, but they are currently my two favourite Russian drug cheats. Maria Sharapova versus Russian curling.
Let's put it this way: if you're doping and curling, you can fucking launch one of those fuckers.
But you don't want to launch it too hard. That's the thing.
She'll just bat it away.
The hammer stone. Yeah.
Well, that's true. Yeah, if she's doped up as well, she could like knock that one. It might just go through her net though.
Armor with a steel racket.
If someone chucked a curling stone at you, you could chuck it very far, though, could you? If you're on drugs,
Maria Sharapova is actually pretty massive. Have you ever seen her shoulders? Her shoulders are really broad as well.
I couldn't quite remember what it was that they said that she was taking, because she said it was a She said that she thought she had a TUI. She thought she had a therapeutic use exemption for the thing that she was taking, and apparently it expired and she was still taking it anyway, and I can't remember exactly what it was that she was taking.
Pretty sure that's what Lance Armstrong said as well.
Yeah. No, he was just fucking cheating. That's what Bradley Wiggins is all, and Chris Froome is all about TUIs and stuff like that, but no, they've TUEs. TUE. Yeah, TUE, yeah, sorry, yeah. Yes.
They were a scourge on combat sports, so.
TUI is the travel company that take you on holiday.
TUI. Or really shit New Zealand beer.
Hello, world. Now, what were they? What were the hell?
Isn't that Thomas Cook?
That was
Thomas
changed their name.
But they changed their name to TUI now.
Yeah. Or was that Top? Yeah.
There's Thompson.
Thompson is TUI. I don't know which one it was. Whichever one had the scandal.
Aye.
With that kid dying.
Oh God!
I think
if you go on a package holiday, I was about to say you deserve all you get there, but you don't deserve your kids to die. I'm sorry.
Jesus Christ!
No. Couple of beers and a gin.
She's awful. So I would say I don't know much about the Russian curler. I'm not gonna lie.
He went to the Winter Olympics and they weren't expected to do any good at all. And him and his wife got a bronze medal in the couples curling, which is a new event that nobody else.
It's not
played.
Couples. It's called doubles curling.
Couples curling.
Mixed doubles.
Have you thought about that, Kutch? You know, you and the good lady wife getting out on a good couples date down the ice rink. You know, just slide one down.
I didn't like the mixed doubles. I felt it didn't have anywhere near attention of a full curling match.
Yeah. You prefer group curling.
I prefer group people curling.
No, I actually think.
I love how we started this with the best intention of doing a really serious episode, and then we're making sexual innuendos about curling.
No, I would God say, I think couples curling is the best idea in the world. Like when they've reached that stage where they no longer love each other, but they're still cohabiting and just like constantly bitching each other. Oh, you could have done that so much better. Why are you always like this? Just like a domestic down the rink.
You never sweep at home, do you?
Why'd you keep looking at her? What?
You're never that delicate with me. Yeah.
Why do you always want to go curling? It's the only way I can get my rocks off.
Taking drugs, it was nothing to do with performance, it was just so we could cope with the emotional situation he found to be
pure escapism.
Get away from his wife.
Just can we push the beds together tonight? No, they're just sweeping.
Is it
the
our
bed.
Anniversary? Even? No.
Got this image of him like dropping a tab of acid before going on, just to spice things up.
As we've talked about in the podcast before. I would have loved drugs to be involved if we'd organised curling for your snack. That would have been amazing.
To briefly circumvent, back to the conversation.
Who would win?
What I would say is that Maria Sharapova, I actually just looked up Maria Sharapova's Grand Slam singles record, and actually I'd forgotten just how bloody impressive it is.
Yeah.
When she was like 16, because she definitely wasn't taking drugs.
No, but actually, winning period from 2004 to 2014, so a decade at the top.
She won. She's not bad.
Yeah, two French Opens, one Australian Open, one Wimbledon, and one US Open.
That's not bad. Good.
And won the tour finals as well. Yeah. So actually, I'd forgotten. I thought she was probably about a four-time.
And that's all when the Williams sisters are there as well. That's very impressive.
If the Williams sisters weren't there, I'm sure she would have won more. Definitely. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think she's a natural born winner with big shoulders.
Yeah, I'm going for Sharapova. I'm calling it.
Masha.
I quite like the curling guy. I think it takes stones to do that.
No, I go for the curling guy as well. It's like, what the fuck that you feel the need to dope in curling? Also, I think there might be some kind of domestic abuse situation going on.
Sharapova's war cry of will scare the shit out of him as well. Oh yeah, I'm thinking the one we were talking about earlier. I'm thinking of Kunitskaya. She goes. Who's Kunitskaya?
Does she sound like an eagle?
Kornikova.
Who's
Kunitskaya?
I don't know. Maybe it's Kornikova. He goes, "Ee." Sorry, I was going to wrong.
Oh no, I think it's God. Actually,
I thought it was Kunitskaya. Didn't she win Wimbledon? Like, no.
Don't know who you're on about. I think you've just made a generic Russian name.
What's annoying is I remember that particular grunt style. Marianne Bartoli? No,
I don't know.
I can't remember.
Who are you going for, Mark? You get called
Masha.
Masha?
Maria Sharapova, yeah.
Oh, is that her name? Right, okay, well, I tried to stand up for you, curling man, but these guys are having it. So
I'm going curling.
It's actually quite difficult to stand up because he's on ice.
Yeah. Another draw?
Yeah.
We're having, despite all the drugs cheating, there's a lot of draws here. So.
Can I pee?
Yeah.
I don't know, Mark, can you? Sorry, it's Mr. Hunter and me coming out.
Oh, my God.
I think you mean, may I go to the toilet?
Living in America.
Yeah, that song's in Rocky as well. It's in Rocky film.
I know that's what I got had in my head. I've seen Rocky.
Holy shit. I'm actually a little bit surprised at that. I know the your reference. General pop culture movie.
My general movie knowledge is that, but I did go out with Chris Rogers, remember? There were certain things that he made me watch, and Rocky was one of them. Rocky 2. Rocky and Muppets, Rocky 2 or Rocky Muppets 3? Christmas
Rocky
Carol.
Rocky 4.
Also made me watch that. The only time with
Drago.
Yeah.
Wasn't it 2?
No, Rocky 4.
Well, Rocky 2 is Apollo Creed, isn't it? No, Rocky 1's Apollo Creed. Rocky 2, he's friends with Apollo Creed.
Yeah. And then Rocky 3 is Mr. T. And then Rocky 4 is...
Is Rocky 5 the Tommy Gunn or whatever he's called? Yeah.
When it's the young guy and he trains him up.
Yeah.
Oh, Tommy the Machine Gun.
Yeah. That's such a bad...
I've not seen any of the new ones.
Right.
Any of them.
I started watching Creed.
I've seen one of them. But are there more than one new one?
There's Rocky Balboa. And then there's a sequel to that, isn't
there? There's one called Creed, which is...
And then there's Creed.
The
which
Son
is,
of Creed, isn't
there? The first new one that came out was actually really good.
Yeah, I think really so.
That was it. I was going out with Rudge when Rocky Balboa came out, because he made me watch it, and he made me watch all the other Rockies in the run-up to that one.
So you got
one.
The backstory.
So I had to watch the whole thing. Yeah.
There was the one where Rocky was... there was a TV adaptation of... Halloween, you know, Halloween. Mm-hmm. No, that was not Halloween. No,
Scream.
No, Halloween. But anyway,
it was Psycho.
Yeah. But anyway, Halloween was
Bates
the one.
Bates Motel,
slasher,
which always makes me laugh.
One of the slasher ones. Yeah, it was like, and Rocky was in it, but it was a made for TV thing. Oh. It was a Rocky Horror Show.
Oh my God. That was a walk. I was wondering where you were going. I was like, you're talking shit, mate.
Someone call Sean from Walk 5.
Please put that in the cut at the end and then put an apology immediately afterwards for how
Yeah,
shit
Sean,
that joke
we found
was.
A new Walk and Fight.
Oh, a long walked up Edmund joke. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Okay. Get your
Okay, who's next?
Jamie, you're me.
I'll go. So, my fight is originally going to go for the sailors of the Kronstadt Rebellion against Trotsky, commander of the Red Army. All of the sailors versus Trotsky armed ironically with an ice pick. But
even Mark didn't know enough about that to have a conversation.
I'm more post-communist.
I know more about the actual revolution itself. I don't know anything about the post-communist stuff.
But you do like a boatload of semen, though, by the sound of it.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
Allegedly.
Oh, no. That was actually pretty good. That's much better than your last joke. So I went a bit more real world. And since I was talking about this earlier, I'm going to go with Vladimir Putin with his supposed black belts in many sports, including judo and sambo, which might be real, Kyoshikin karate, probably not real, ninth degree black belt in taekwondo, having never trained in taekwondo, definitely not real. Ninth like degree is the highest you can get as well.
Is that like an honorary degree?
Yeah. And so he's going to fight against Khabib Nurmagomedov, who is a UFC fighter who's going to fight for a title very soon, who has a perfect record of 25-0, which is almost impossible to do in MMA.
He's frightening.
25 wins with no losses is almost impossible. Yeah, well, this is where it's interesting.
He's not
Chechen. He's Dagestani. So he's Muslim. He's Dagestani. He plays up the Russian thing to get a lot of fans. Mm-hmm. But he is a very scary man who is a master of sports in sambo, judo black belt, good wrestling pedigree, couple other things maybe. But he literally, like, he just throws people over his shoulder and then puts them on the ground and repeatedly punches them in the face.
Yeah, there's also videos of him, like, wrestling bears
when he was a kid,
yeah.
Yeah, as a child, him literally wrestling bears.
Yeah.
As a child, his dad was pretty... Daggett, just a little bit of history for listeners.
Bear cubs must put out
most,
there as well.
Most of Russia's... Dagestan is, by head of population, by far the best place for amateur wrestling in the world. Mm-hmm. Most of Russia's medals come from Dagestan, Chechnya,
Whereabouts is it? I know where Chechnya is. Is it next to Chechnya? Or?
Yeah, it's in the Caucasus.
Yeah. So you got this flavour of the big Russian strongman versus the small... it's not a country, but they probably wish they were an independent country. And you've got a guy who's a fake... in a lot of things, probably, versus a guy who very much isn't.
Yeah.
And, So,
Is Dagestan still disputed? I can't remember.
No, there's a strong man in charge of it now.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. Just like Chechnya with Kadyrov,
yeah.
who actually sponsors MMA fighters to wear like his ACME MMA things. And apparently the US government is checking which MMA fighters are doing this because like you really shouldn't be in business with that guy.
No, yeah. you really shouldn't.
No, he's purge against gay people, all sorts of things. Not a nice bloke.
No,
not at all.
But anyway, so yeah.
Yeah. So is this MMA guy, is he fighting bums?
No.
He's got 25-0, he's fighting bums, man. He's fighting bums.
He's actually not. He's fighting
the best people in the world.
He's fought his way up as well. Yeah. You know, it's not been like cans have just been put against him. He's fought his way up and he's terrifying. Like
bear wrestling. It's like
when he must have been a man.
He's a child.
Yeah.
He looks about maybe
eight, nine, something.
And he's wrestling a bear cub.
In a full trackie.
wait, the bear is wearing a trackie.
Can we take a pause and look at this on the internet?
Yeah. Pause.
Please let's pause this. Listen, we're gonna go and watch this on the internet and then come back to you. Oh, it's got so his wrestling the bear is soundtracked by the XX. That's quite future looking for this. Oh, that bear's like actually chewing on him, isn't it? That bear has his polyester tracksuit in its mouth.
I'm actually disappointed because when you said he was wearing a tracksuit, I imagined you were talking about the bear.
I would like to point out,
that's a new one at the Build-A-Bear Factory.
I would like to point out that that's not a tracksuit, that's a shell suit. He's not allowed near a bonfire.
No. Max is the leisure wear expert.
The bear just took his feet out from underneath him.
But then he got back up and kept fighting the bear.
He gets up and he smashes. He smash.
The bear's got a chain around his neck. Yeah,
it's definitely animal cruelty.
But it's also Dagestan in 1997. Yeah. So
it's also clearly children wrestling bears is like a national pastime.
They take
wrestling
really seriously in Dagestan. Yeah.
I mean, like, it's mental.
The bear's really cute. I have to say, really, I think the bear's gonna win. If this is the Fight Club, I pick the bear.
Yeah, it's quite a good one.
I hope the bear's not an allegory for Putin. I've got a question. I think this will come down to, clearly, if it's a one-on-one fight, then what's his name again?
Habib.
Yeah. So if it's a one-on-one fight, Habib wins. However, if Putin has his FSB guys in the crowd with guns, I think it's like...
Or nerve agent.
30 seconds into the fight, as soon as it became obvious that Habib was winning, somebody would release a nerve agent and everybody would die. And nobody wins.
There was an MMA event, I think it was M1 Global, with Fedor Emelianenko, who's massively popular in Russia. I think he's a politician now, actually, in Russia.
Yes, he is.
And one of his fights, not that long ago, maybe 5 years ago in Russia, Vladimir Putin came in the ring and everybody booed.
Booed Putin?
Yeah.
Ooh.
I was really surprised. And I don't know what the thing was, but I was watching an illegal live stream of the event and everybody online was like, the hell?
But maybe that was like to big up his ego. Like people used to boo the wolf at the gladiators. Maybe he was like, yes, but I want to be the bad guy. I want people to dislike.
Turned heel.
Yeah. What's his name? What was the guy in the wrestling? The Undertaker. Yeah. Like, actually, everyone booed the Undertaker, but he was everyone's favourite. Because, I think that was staged booing.
But it was very strange. I remember watching it going, what the hell? But, yeah, that's what happens to Putin when he turns up at MMA events. The only other person that happens to is, what's his name?
CM Punk.
No, well, him as well, because he's a dirty faker. But the guy from AC Slater from Saved by the Bell.
Oh, yeah. Is he a wrestler?
He was a wrestler in Saved by the Bell.
He was a wrestler in Saved by the Bell. What do people boo
him? He used to turn up to MMA events and they'd put him up on the camera. They put up celebrities on the camera. Yeah. Whenever AC Slater came up, boo. It's really funny. And I haven't seen him at an event for years.
Oh,
he gets booed all the time.
He was favourite of Saved by the Bell.
Oh, you disgust me, Max.
His name was Marco, someone or other. Mario Lopez.
I just looked it up.
It would always call Mario Lopez, AC Slater.
You've never done anything with all your life.
I still have a crush on Kelly Kapowski. I think it depends what Putin's got in his back pocket, because if Putin got really angry he would just invade Dagestan.
It's very true.
Well, I think they own Dagestan
I'm gonna go for Habib because he's gonna smash him with his elbow.
I secretly hope that Habib smashes him. But I don't want Habib
get a TKO on a guy by repeatedly suplexing him over his shoulder and landing him, that guy, on his head. He did it about four times and knocked the guy. It was disgusting. I actually was like, holy shit, this guy is messed up.
Yeah. I'm just really conscious, though, that this podcast going on the internet and that Putin might hear it. and then he hears you saying that you hope that this other guy smashes his face
Putin,
in.
I hope Habib smashes your face in.
My God, Jimmy, we're all going to die.
Nerve agent.
And Putin, I'd happily work as a double agent, as long as the pay is good.
You did just ruin my joke of, I think I've touched a nerve. Oh.
it's even worse than your own payment.
I'm calling it.
Yeah.
Are you all going for Habib?
I'm going for Putin.
I'm
going
to go Putin as well, because I think he'd be dirty.
He's not the hardest. To me, Putin's still not the hardest world leader. If you've ever seen the Bulgarian Prime Minister,
I thought you were going to say if you've ever seen Angela Merkel wrestle.
I bet Angela Merkel would win against a full grizzly bear. She'd just destroy that.
But I think Putin as well.
I'm going to go for the bear. I pick the bear.
So is that another draw?
Another draw? Yeah.
Wow. Draws all around tonight. Well, right. I've got a final fight for us. And it's quite a good one. So, we're going to go with Russia's natural enemy here. James Bond.
Oh, I thought you were going to say democracy.
we didn't mean it, Putin.
Yeah. Especially,
I thought you were going to say central planning.
Late 80s, early 90s,
the
James
lack of
Bond.
Consumer goods. Bottlenecks in the planned economy.
Yeah. But economic reports show that it was actually a more efficient system. Because it's less efficient to stack shelves. True story.
So,
James Bond. Let's get back to James Bond.
Late 80s, early 90s, James Bond, when he did like to go after Russians a lot.
Yep.
I say late 80s, 90s, but it's actually Sean Connery's James Bond that we've got here.
Oh, that's Alan. That's like 60s James Bond.
Yeah, but he's in the 80s, 90s. He's got that mindset of a...
So he's old.
Well, he is now, isn't he?
Yeah, well...
In his 80s or 90s.
Sort of Moore Dalton. Moore Dalton
era, but imagine Sean Connery.
But with Sir Sean.
Yeah.
So better.
So, yeah. So it's Connery's Bond versus Marco Ramlos, who was the captain of the submarine in The Hunt for Red October. That's right. Sean Connery's captain.
Hunt for Red October.
So I've got a couple of interesting facts just as these two go into the nonagon. They're both 6'2".
Because they're the same person.
Wait,
I've read the joke, haven't I?
They're both 6'2", and they both have the same accent. they're the facts.
Although one was Russian and one was nominally English at the time, and any Scottish ancestry was written in after he played them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I've got a confession, which is not surprising to anybody who knows me. I have never watched a James Bond film all the way through to the end. I once went to the cinema to see a James Bond film, and it was Quantum of Solace.
Bad one.
Not only was it a bad one, I was with my brother, who was going through a divorce at the time and was very drunk. And we had to leave before it ended. So I have paid to go and see a James Bond film at the cinema, and I have still never seen a James Bond film all the way through.
Skyfall's a good one to start on. You're starting now.
Yeah. In fact, there's probably any of the Daniel Craig ones just to start. But yeah, so it's
do you want a linking back interesting fact?
Yeah.
So in The Hunter for Red October, Marco Rumius, or whatever, which actually to my mind sounds Lithuanian.
Is he meant to be Russian? Yeah.
I don't know.
Lithuania was part of the USSR though.
Certainly, Lithuanian.
It does sound Lithuanian.
Reluctantly. but he secretly kills political officer called Ivan Putin.
Oh.
Foreshadowing.
Oh, hello.
Like a guy, is that the guy from the Politburo or whatever is there to oversee the...
I'll admit, it's been a while since I've seen it.
Yeah, I think there's a guy who's killed quite early on who's...
Yeah.
He's there to watch over everything.
Yeah. Oh. Yep. I think you're right. I think that's him, yeah. So
my dad fucking loved Hunt for Red October.
It's a great film!
I have seen Hunt for Red October all the way through because he used to watch it whenever it was on telly.
Jack Ryan at his best.
But can't actually remember what happened. Was that? That's not where I, in my head, half of me thinks that that's where the submarine goes missing and gets stuck on the bottom and everyone dies. But that was real life.
That
wasn't
was the curse.
That was the curse.
Yeah. That was a horrific tragedy.
ever since the curse, I have had an incredible fear of submarines. Like
it's not like they occur regularly. Max. No. Not like I'm going to work today. How are we getting there? Oh, the submarine.
How are we getting there? Like my new boat, of course.
You mentioned Leningrad earlier. I've had a massive fear of Leningrad since I learned about it in second year history at high school.
Thanks.
It freaked me out. And like Aleppo recently was like Leningrad and, you know, the populace being starving. And it's horrific.
But people don't go to sieges for fun. People go on submarines for fun. I don't know why you would do that. You could not pay me enough money to go on a submarine. Like, I actually wouldn't. There's nothing that would make me go on a submarine.
Well, there's one of those cool submarines where you went down and David Attenborough explained all the cool animals to you.
No, did you not watch that episode of Blue Planet where they went down in the submarine and it started to leak and they were at the bottom of like the deepest bit of the ocean and the guy was like, oh, we've got some water coming in, and I was actually like, I can't watch this anymore. It's like, this is upsetting me too much. I had to fast forward a bit worse, of Blue Planet.
If you're in a Red October with its silent running engines as well, it'd be worse because no one would ever find you.
The Kursk? Did they ever find the Kursk? Like, I don't think they did. Did they? Oh my god!
They sent
honestly,
teams to go down, but I don't know what happened.
No. So in my head, James Bond would win just by the fact that everybody on the Hunt for Red October would die because they were in a submarine. They would die before James Bond wouldn't find them because they would be dead because they were in a submarine.
James Bond would, just before the submarine sank, would say a cheesy one-liner.
Yeah.
Like I can't remember. Nice to know you. No.
That's Bruce Forsyth.
Yeah.
It'd be something like, I've got one.
It's nice to see you going down on someone or something like that. God, it'd be something horrible.
I was going to go with a curse got both your houses.
Oh, holy fuck.
That's genuinely dark, Max.
Yeah, that is really dark.
Well, that's my message to James Bond and the other Sean Connery character.
So can I just say, all this anti-submarine chat.
Yeah,
I'd love to have gone on a Jacques Cousteau submarine.
Oh yeah, definitely.
He had that little diving saucer, submarine.
No,
wicked.
Yeah,
I wouldn't even go on a Steve Zissou submarine. Fucking love Wes Anderson.
What if Sue George was there? Yeah, playing David Bowie covers in Portuguese.
Yeah, not on the submarine. No, I'm sorry. No, he can play them on the mainland for me. That's fine, but not in a submarine.
Can I just say I've sort of slightly gone off Sue George in the last couple of days because I watched the official Pelé biography where Sue George plays Pelé's dad.
Oh, really?
Oh yeah. And what is? I mean, we've been talking about like illiberalism and autocracy and things like that, but I've never seen a worse bit of propaganda than the Pelé biopic. Shooting lightning bolts out his belly to cure cancer. Like, literally. That is the level of like outrageous lies. Pelé won the World Cup by playing keepy uppy and never passing the ball in 1958. Oh, seriously, it is outrageous.
Could they not afford 10 extras to play his teammates, and he was just on his own on a football pitch.
Yeah. Never mind Garincha, he was in it briefly, but you know.
Okay. Well, I've clearly stated my position on this fight, so what are other people going for?
Jamie?
I think I'd have to go. Oh my god, I don't know. I'd have to go for Bond because he'll find some stupid way to pull it off in the end.
Something like, in his
he'll
watch.
He'll be loaded into a torpedo tube about to be blown out into sea, and
John, I'd just like to say, you've just said pull it off, loaded and blown out in the same sentence.
You have a homoerotic issue with submarines. They are phallic.
You seem like a fun time.
I think Bond as well, because he's always got something up his sleeve. He would just
Bond's a natural winner. He wins every time. He's never lost.
But then again, is it Bond or is it Sean Connery versus Sean Connery? And
everyone loses in that scenario.
Zardoz comes in and slaps him.
Yeah, or just really Zardoz. Wow, that took a moment. Yeah.
Wait, what's that from?
It is sci-fi film from like
it was like a contractual thing that he couldn't get out of. Yeah, he's like wearing like
a mankini.
Yes. God, I didn't know where that was actually from.
Friend of a podcast, Ali, fucking loves Zardoz. And Putin, actually. Loves Putin as well. So
and he knows about computers. What?
What?
Were we thinking of the same Ali?
No.
No. Oh,
totally different alley.
No.
Ah, well.
So got my alleys mixed up. Sorry, I really had to bring that
down.
You went
down a blind alley.
Oh, my word. Okay, great joke. great joke, Jamie.
Yeah. Well, you've been on fire recently.
Yeah.
Have I?
No. Just ever since
I've got to get my chat ready for the sailors. They'll have great. Yeah. I've got to keep up with them.
Well, as we were all discussing earlier, the fact that you're featured in page 3 of the Nofirmal.
I have.
So, Jamie with his baps out.
Hey.
Local rag.
Whoa. That isn't what you focus on. You focus on the bit where I say something interesting
about world
the
peace.
Yeah. The Russia situation, how we should all just work it out.
Yeah. We ignore your baps.
Yeah.
Flapping freely.
Wait, they're just
is that not the Brown Appreciation?
It was a genuine website. That's how we get the fucking guys in to have a look, and then we go, wait, we're going to sting you with real hard hitting politics here. Here's an economic report of why the Soviet Union wasn't as bad as everybody thinks. No.
I really think now fiveclub.co.uk needs to have a page 3 with your baps. Right, okay.
Well, that's a calendar we'll be selling on Patreon.
Along with Marxist dissertation. £5 for Marxist dissertation, £3 for Jamie's BAP calendar.
Wow. Did we come to a consensus?
Yeah, Bond. Yeah,
Bond. Good.
Well, cool. I'm sitting this one out because I don't believe in somebody.
You don't believe in them. Somebody. You are infinitely afraid of them.
So, right, okay. Well, I think that really needs to wrap things up. Jamie, would you like to give us the socials?
Yeah, because I forgot to earlier. So please talk to us on facebook.com/fiveclubpod or at fiveclub, Twitter at fiveclub, Instagram Ken at fiveclub. Oh, no. Email ken@fiveclub.co.uk, Instagram fiveclub, or on www.fiveclub.co.uk.
Boom!
Lovely stuff.
Yeah. Well.
Hashtag pray for Ant McPartlin.
He got blinding drunk.
Oh my god.
You have to know the PJ backstory in order to get that joke. I like that joke so much because you have to understand it on so many levels.
Oh god, this is what this has turned into.
We should drink.
Right.
We shouldn't drink to the podcast.
Let's wrap this up. It brings me to that time of the podcast where I have to ask Mags, what is
Mags is doing a massive don't ask me, cut it off, cough my head.
I forgot.
What is the motto this week?
Don't go on submarines.
No, it's always wear your goggles when you're at paintball.
Good night.
That's a really sage life lesson.
I know. Oh my god.